Hello and welcome to the Sacred Space Storytelling Podcast, a place where we will dive deep into epic discussions on birth, motherhood, womanhood, rites of passage, and so much more. We are your hosts, Lucy, a mama of four, a birth keeper, a women's worker, and a past midwife who has left the system in the pursuit of truly being with woman.
And Christy, a mama of three, birth and pregnancy advocate, community service worker with a strong interest in the shamanic dimensions of the journey from girlhood into womanhood and beyond.
Come with us now as we unravel today's conversation. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the Sacred Space Storytelling Podcast. Today we have Amy Lou on and we're so excited. Amy is a mama of three beautiful humans, a birth keeper, an unschooler, an artist, and content creator. She is working a lot at the intersection of free birth and unschooling. She's dedicated to supporting families to claim the life they truly desire through de-schooling and connecting to their authentic self-expression. Welcome, Amy.
Welcome, Amy. Finally, we've got Amy on.
Yay.
So today we are like psyched to pick your brain on all things homeschooling, unschooling, free birth, all the juicy topics. Christy is about to jump into homeschool land and it's on the cards for me. So we're like super excited to pick your brain and hear all about it, all your experiences, what it looks like for you and your family. So
all my favorite things to talk about.
I said that to Lucy at the start. She's like, now I've got, because Lucy's like, I mean, she's way more organized than me, but she's like, this is the prompts. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down for the prompts. I'm like, but really, we're actually all quite similar in a lot of ways. I think it's going to flow.
It's going to be perfect. Yes. I'm so excited.
And we've got Primrose and Finn here, so that if you hear babies, that's what that's about. Hopefully they'll behave. Are you going to behave, Finn?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. Okay, so to jump on in to this episode, episode 8, I'd love to begin with hearing your experience of matrescence, of what was your journey from maiden and into mother. And also, yeah, I'd just love to hear like what led you to home birth for your first.
I've actually been thinking about my matrescence a lot lately because I feel like I've only just really integrated that. And my oldest is 9 this year. And that's just opened a whole can of worms as to how long it actually takes to integrate the process and that the rite of passage of matrescence, which is a whole other conversation. So I've really been in that portal recently. So that's a really great question, a great place to start. So my matrescence, it was really easeful, but it shook me at the same time. So I'm such a mama. I'm a Cancerian. My archetype is a mother. Motherhood is at the center of everything I do. I've wanted to be a mother for as long as I can remember. Sylvester was consciously conceived. It was just such a beautiful, natural process, and felt easeful for me to step into my motherhood season. But I was at the time, you know, living in a warehouse in the inner west of Sydney with 7 other people, and I was the first person of my friendship group to have a baby.
Wow.
And I just had never really been around anybody that had even acknowledged matrescence. I didn't know what the word matrescence was. Like, didn't even know what the word postpartum was at that time.
Yeah.
So even though I was really, it felt really natural to step into motherhood, I'd never been around anybody that had ever really honored that sacred rite of passage.
How old were you again?
30. Sylvester 2 weeks after I turned 30.
Yeah.
And so, it just, in that way, it shook me because I didn't realize how big it was. it literally, like, I feel like the best way to describe it is that it pulled the rug out from under me. And yeah. I know that we go through a death and we have a baby, but I just never had, I didn't have any awareness of just how big it would be, because I'd been around all these women that just got on with it. And
yeah,
you know, bounce back culture was like something that was just, you know, in my field, more than resting, more than actual postpartum care. So yeah, it shook me. And I think it's taken me quite a long time to really fully integrate that experience, even after having two other babies and having, you know, being more aware about the process of postpartum and what that entails. So yeah, I guess it was, for me, it was one of those experiences of, you know, it felt so natural to be a mother and be with Sylvester and be home with him. And, but that shift for me was really clunky.
Me too. I can relate to you so much.
And so, yeah, I home birthed him, because the thing that led me to home birth was the fact that I just can't be in a hospital. I can't be in any environment where there's fluoro lights and strangers. Like, even at that time, I found it hard to go to parties and be around lots of energy. Like, I've never been that type of person. You know, I've never really been a drinker. I've never really been the type of person that feels comfortable around lots of strangers. And so going to a hospital to birth was just like, just not even on the cards for me. But I didn't really know that there was like a home birth culture. I didn't know that that was a thing. I didn't even know that you could hire a private midwife. And so I found a public funded home birth program through St. George Hospital in Kogra. And I actually had a really great experience, all things considered. And
yeah.
I won midwife roulette. I just thought it was normal to have continuity of care and have 1 hour long appointments through the hospital system, because that's what I got. But I want, it was actually, I had one.
Do you have to go to the hospital for the?
Yeah. Basically a hospital birth at home. So all of the antenatal care is done in the hospital.
Yeah.
And to be honest, at that time, I was just willing to jump through all the hoops and do all the things to get my home birth. And upon reflection, it was actually quite stressful, and I would never do that again in a million years, or even recommend anybody do that. But at that time in my life, that was actually a really awakening experience. It sounds like I'm defending the system. I'm not defending the system.
No, I get it though, because I relate. Late.
She was a mom, honestly. Like, I love her so much, and I'm actually still in touch with her.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. And so I scraped in 42 weeks with Sylvester. He came at 41 weeks and 6 days. And I was, you know, almost pushed into birthing in the system. I didn't even know free birth was a thing at that time. There's no way I would have free birthed at that time. And so I was really stressed out before I birthed him, because obviously there's that timeline. But, you know, knowing him now, makes sense that he waited until 46 weeks and one day to
46. How much did he wait? Oh, I thought you said 46 weeks. I'm like,
41 weeks and 6
weeks. I was about to say, wow.
Everything feels a bit upside down.
I get it.
The energy right now is wild.
I was actually just going to be impressed more than anything. Like, whoa.
I've got 46 weeks, although, yeah. There's no way I would have got a hospital home birth if I went. No.
And what was like, people around you during that time, like, were they just full supportive of your choices? Did you know anyone else who'd home birthed? Like, what was that vibe?
I think Emma, who I'd only just met, Emma New Earth Mama Emma, was the only person I had met who had home birthed, but we weren't really friends. I'd met her a couple of times. And when I met her, it was so validating, because aside from her, I didn't know anybody else that had home birthed before. And I think I was 6 months pregnant when I met her. My family were, they felt uncomfortable, I guess, with my decision, but they've always been like supportive of my decision. So they expressed how they felt, but that's as far as it went. All of my housemates, all seven of them, were supportive of my decision. They were all home when I gave birth.
So epic.
It was like 8:30.
That's actually so cool. I love that.
Yeah, I would never do that again, but it was so perfect at that time.
But at the time with your first, like, I get it.
They weren't in the space with me. They were outside my bedroom and I didn't know. They were all huddled together outside my bedroom. Like,
but what an experience for them too.
Yeah.
Totally.
Like, that would have influenced them in some way on their journey.
Yeah, I hope so. I definitely think it did in a lot of ways. It really it helped them, really feel connected to our son. You know, he just into the warehouse family and part of the family. I guess that was really nice to have all those people around postpartum to just help me.
Wow.
Eating and cleaning and all of those types of things.
Yeah, full community.
That stuff. But it's interesting because even though I lived in that environment, I still felt lonely in my postpartum because I, like I said before, I didn't really have anybody around me that had had a baby before and really understood postpartum. And I didn't understand it to the point where I took Sylvester to an art gallery opening in Redfern 2 days after he was born. Because I was so high, like, I couldn't see anything. I was bleeding and they were going to this art opening and I was like, oh, I'm gonna come, I'm gonna bring my baby, he's gonna be sick. Honestly. But I mean, a lot of people do that. They just go out after they have a baby. I didn't know that I needed to stay in bed and rest, and would never do that again ever. But at the time, it was fun. I had fun. So there was a big unraveling process happening though, because all of my instincts were like, what the hell are you doing out here? Like, why are you in Redfern?
Yeah.
At 9 p.m. on a Friday night, like, what are you doing? Like, I literally couldn't see anything. Everything was fuzzy. And I got to a point where I'm like, I just need to go home. Like, what am I doing here? But there was in those moments, I wasn't my body was communicating to me and I just wasn't even listening because I didn't have the awareness of what was actually going on and what I really needed and what my baby needed. So I wouldn't recommend doing that to anybody who's listening.
No way. I feel like I did the same, and I think back and I think, how did I do that? But I feel like you said, like, there, I just didn't have that awareness. There was a level of disconnect there too, where I just didn't know. Like,
yeah, and that's the culture that we live in, you know, bounce back culture. You know, when we step outside of our bubble, it's actually quite horrifying, isn't it? You know,
yes,
what women are doing after they have babies and that the, you know, lack of support that they have to actually rest and heal and recover from birth. It's alarming. But I did with Sylvester. I had an incredible birth. You know, my hospital midwives were so hands off.
Wow.
Like, they sat in another room the whole time and they just came in when I was pushing. They didn't wear gloves. They were amazing. Like, I know that that's such a uncommon experience. And I guess his birth, you know, I felt so good after I had him. The first thing I said after I gave birth was, I want to do that again.
Yes. What was the labor like? Like, how did you, because you're first, you don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, it was, it was amazing. I went in, I had a night of labor 2 days before I went into labor again. It was like, I don't really believe in early labor or pre-labor. It was just like a night of really consistent contractions, and I feel like, you know, that was really helping me understand and feel and get into, you know, our flow together. And then it just stopped, and it was really beautiful to have that, because when it happened again, I was ready. You know, I could really welcome the sensations. His labor was about 12 hours from, you know, the night that it started up again. It was 12 hours, like 6 p.m., maybe 14 hours. I had him at 8:30 in the morning, and it was so beautiful. I felt like I was outside of my body a lot though, because I was like, whoa, why didn't anyone tell me it was going to be this intense?
Totally.
You can't really tell anybody, but it was really beautiful, and I just had so much space to just be present in the experience. And my partner was, you know, I think when I was in transition, were about to go into transition, you know, I had that beautiful big pause in the labor with Sylvester's birth. And I had this moment where my partner and I felt like hours. I don't know how long it was, but we were just in the pool, like eye gazing. And that was like our wedding.
Wow.
And we like called him through together. And I just like remember thinking to myself, like, this is so beautiful. Like, I'm so lucky that I get to experience this. And yeah, I had him, and yeah, pushing was pretty long. I think it was like 2 hours of pushing with him, which was insane. And I said, I can't do it, to my midwife once. And she's like, you're doing it. That's all she said to me in the whole labor.
That's so impressive though. Like, just, I always, cause I didn't like, I have my first at the hospital. So I'm always just so in awe with women that do that for their first babies. Cause that's a big deal. Like, especially in the society that we live in, like, it's not, and you know, however many, like 9 years ago, my daughter's 9 too. And it's like, I feel like that wasn't even really a thing, like you said. So it's like, to actually lean into that is really admirable.
In my community at that time, for sure. But
yeah,
I've always just trusted my body. Mm. And I didn't ever have a doubt that I wouldn't be able to birth my baby at home. And then, you know, when I went out into the world and told people that I had an amazing experience, that's when the shock came, that people were confused. Like, what? No. Childbirth doesn't feel good. Like, how could you have a good experience? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it's amazing. And so that's when the unraveling really started. I was like, something is very wrong here, because why am I having a good experience? Like, is there something wrong with me? Am I like a masochist? But I'm not. Like, it's supposed to feel good after giving birth. And so yeah, that's when the unraveling really started to happen for me. It wasn't so much during the pregnancy, it was when I went out into the world, and then I was felt guilty for sharing my amazing birth stories, and was reluctant to share it because there wasn't actually many people in my life that resonated with that.
It's so true. It's you know what, it's really true, like that. And you'll probably be able to agree, like with homeschooling as well, it's all very connected and very the same. Where when I've decided to make my, I mean, it's been on the cards for so long, but I've decided to make that decision, and then going and talking to people and going, whoa, like people get super triggered.
Really true.
You know, like it's like this, that. Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, cause I was like, yeah, I understand this with birth, but now I'm like, this is just a layer of within the mother realm and your children and trusting yourself and all the things. It's like, what the hell? Where have I been living? Like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm tripping out, actually.
It's so confronting sometimes.
It is.
Yeah, and exhausting as well. And yeah, I'm definitely, you know, in my work, I'm really, really working in I'm working in that intersection of like sovereign birth and unschooling and compasses, because it is kind of the same thing in so many ways.
It really, I've noticed that, like I thought I was like, it's actually really humbling too, because like I'm like, I thought I was like really aware and awake and shit, and now I'm like, whoa, no, I'm actually not at all. But it's cool because it's really humbling, it's really grounding, and I'm like, wow, this is, I actually love life more, because I'm like, this is really beautiful, and that I get to have this opportunity to lean in, knowing very well it's not going to be easy, but leaning in anyway and just trusting myself and just being like, I've got this. Like,
I agree
that. Yeah, it's like, it's so cool. It's actually so, so cool. And I feel like it's part of the, I can never say this word, matrescence. That's it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a part of the matrescence process too, with the whole homeschooling thing, like leaning into mothering even like deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. And that process, you know, I read something recently about how after we give birth to our first child, it actually takes up to 7 years or 8 or 9 years for our hormones to actually really balance. And when I read that, I felt that in my body, because it's not just 3 months or a year or 18 months or whatever it is that the previous you know, studies have said, it has felt longer to me, and I found that to be very, like, so validating. Even though I've had other babies in that time, I feel like it's taken me that much time to not come back to myself, because I'm a different person, but, like, feel whole as
fully
me again.
Mm. Yes.
As a mother.
Yeah. And before great. That, you know, it's like new parts have just been dropping in that whole entire time, and it's so non-linear and mysterious and fucking hard.
Yeah.
Especially in this linear culture, to really surrender into that process. And yeah, now, you know, I'm on the other side, 9 years in, it's still, I feel like it's even still happening, but I've, like, landed now.
Yeah.
And yeah,
that makes me want to cry.
Surely resonate. Yeah.
Oh, that does feel like I can really resonate with that. Whoa.
Yeah. I remember when you shared it, or I saw it shared at the same time as when you reshared it. And I think Noah had just turned 9, and he's turning 10 this year. But last year really was like this big, like coming home, like that's what it felt like to myself, or completion of a circle.
Yeah.
And then I read that and I was like, oh, like, no wonder. Because for so long I was like, why am I still processing his birth? Like,
right?
It's just, like, the what we were talking about, Lucy, like the Rudolf Steiner crossing the Rubicon.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, it happens at 9, because that's what my daughter tells me. Yeah, and that's why I've starting to homeschool, because she's come into this, like, different consciousness, this different awareness that, oh my God, I feel like I'm actually going to cry. But she, like, there's something that's happened, exactly what you just said, where it's like, I don't know, it's a completion, or because I had such a traumatic birth with her where I was so disconnected. But now, for her to want to homeschool with me, because we've had this, like, very push and pull relationship, that's, I'm just like, oh my God, she wants to be around me and I want to be around her. And I'm like, wow, something's happening. Something's healing. And it's, like, really beautiful.
Amazing.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that. That's so, like, confirming for me.
Yeah, totally. It's such a rite of passage for young people at that age. You know, they're really just expanding into their, you know, a spiritual awareness that's, like, beyond anything they've ever experienced before. And it's not really through us anymore. It's like they're stepping out on their own, but it might feel like they're stepping out a bit and then they're coming back and then they're going out a little bit more and then they're coming back. And so they actually really, really need us through that time, so they can really feel safe to, you know, claim their independence, I guess.
She actually woke up the other night while we were laying in bed. This is how I also knew. And she started talking about death and saying, Mom, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
You're going to die. Like, I'm going to die. And she was so distressed. But, you know, I was able to comfort her because I'm like, oh, I know. I remember feeling that when I was a child. Yeah. And just thinking, oh, my God, my nan and pop. Oh, my God, my mum. Oh, my God. And just having, like, a full, like, existential crisis.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I'm like, how cool is this that I am also so conscious as a mum? Because I didn't get that, and love my mum to pieces, but she just wasn't in that awareness at all back then. But then, you know, I'm able to comfort her and understand that and be like, well, this is so cool, like, that I get to guide you through this.
Yeah, my son's been through the same thing, and yeah, it's been actually so beautiful, and it's just deepened our connection.
Yeah, it's epic and also terrifying, because you're like, yes, we are dying.
Yeah. My son is, like, really interested in what happens afterwards and what happens before it all, like the spaces on either side of life.
Yeah.
And it's been beautiful to, you know, just jam with him on that, because, yeah, it's especially at this age. Because it can really help them to expand beyond the physical.
Fully, totally.
Which is
they probably have good ideas too.
Yeah, totally. It's incredible. And that's, you know, a big reason why we choose not to school, because I want my kids to feel the freedom to be able to explore all of the dimensions that they're interested in, you know. And I just feel that school is so limiting because it's on that, like, on, it's on a schedule, and the material is already, like, it's there, you know. They have requirements that they have to adhere to, and
yeah,
all the things, you know what I'm talking about. And yeah, there just really isn't that much space for, like, interdimensional exploration, you know.
There's not.
Yeah.
Not even at a Steiner school either, to be honest.
Yeah, and even though Steiner philosophy is so much about that, and
yeah,
you know, I would say, you know, Sylvester went to the same Steiner as Lucy's kids, and he loved it, and I loved it too, you know, in
yeah,
a lot of ways. They felt like there was some space for him at that time to do that because of the nature of that particular school. I feel like that school is like an anomaly. There's not very many like that one out there. But even with that, they still have policies, and they have all the things that they have to adhere to. So there's only so far that students can go, I guess, when they're in that yeah, environment. Whereas when they're at home, you know, they can just go as far as they want to go, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yes. Sorry, I'm just going to mute for a second. Sorry, Luce.
That's all right. Yeah, I totally agree. I feel like outside of kindy, it starts to get a little bit more like restricted, and there's like expectation, and there's, yeah, that's what we're struggling with at the moment at this school, just especially Noah, because he's sort of wanting to express himself in different ways, and it's not being encouraged or facilitated at the school.
Yeah.
And that's what prompts me to, like, I want my kids to follow their bliss.
Yeah.
And their passions, you know, and I don't want them to be uninspired because there's those parameters and expectations. And yeah, it's so big. It is that quote, that saying, like, you birth the way you live and you live the way you birth. And I think it also obviously trickles into you school the way you live yeah, and birth and all the things. And it's all just so connected, and it's that next layer of it all. And also stepping up into like our strength as mothers and knowing what we know what's best for our kids.
Totally.
And we know how to birth them, we know how to like raise them, and
we know them, we know them so intimately, like we know what lights them up, we know how they learn, we know what like pisses them off.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
we know how to support them to expand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like we know, you know.
We know. And we're capable of holding that. Like, it's like birth isn't easy. Like schooling and raising children isn't easy, but it's also amazing, and we are capable, like, as women to do that, as humans, as it's, yeah, it's like that other layer of self-responsibility and knowing that we're capable and not outsourcing.
Yeah and it's yeah, it can feel really like challenging at first, you know, when you start going down this road, because if you've never done it before and all you've got to kind of reference is your own schooled experience,
yeah,
then it can feel, you know, it can really come some big blocks, you know. And the biggest ones are, am I doing the right thing? Am I capable? Am I the right person? Or do I know enough? You know, all of those things can just come up. And it's just an opportunity to lean into trusting your child's innate ability to learn, and that they will tell us what they want to learn. And we as the people that know them the deepest, we will be able to co-create those learning experiences with them, because we know how they learn, you know.
And totally,
yeah, it really just comes down to that. But it can
I feel like my daughter, that's like, because my kids go to the same school, but like, what, oh my god, I was about to say, what year are they in, Lucy? Luna and Noah are in year four, and like Luna loves, like, she's super super creative, but and she was always, because I've been asking her about homeschooling for a couple of years, and she's like, absolutely not, mum. Like, I love my friends. I love school. She loved school so much. This is like this big 9-year-old change, though, like, and she's just you know, she's really good friends with Noah, and it's just been perfect. I've never batted an eye. And
okay, all right, you go and get Luna. Okay, I'll finish that in a second.
Okay. Right. But yeah, it's, and I think that's the thing, you know, it's not about completely dismissing school as an option. It's about meeting our children where they're at. And you know, it's, I get asked all the time, what do you do if your kids want to go to school? And like, honestly, I actually have no idea. I don't know. There's no schools in this area that I'm really open to sending them to. I would probably explore more the reasons why they would be asking to go to school, you know, and it might be something that we can support them with outside of that environment. But although I'm like super pro unschooling and homeschooling, it's definitely like free birth. It's not for everyone, I suppose, but we can still create ways where we can do it in our way. Like, I've got friends that kind of do half-half, and there's loopholes that you can write like a note.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
They only send their kids to school like 2 days a week, or their children just know that they have the freedom to just do what they want, and some days they choose school and some days they choose to stay at home. And I, you know, you can actually just do whatever you want. You know, you're not going to go to jail if your child only goes to school.
How funny. It's like people do.
Yeah. It's not one or the other. And
yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's, you know, similar, you know, there's, you don't just have to free birth alone with just your partner. You can call in a birth keeper, or if you want to, you can call in an unregistered midwife, or, you know, or if you want to, you can call in a registered midwife. There's always options to do it in a way where you'll feel aligned and supported by whatever you need in those moments, and it can ebb and flow. And I think that's the beauty of, I call it the school-free life, which is like the body of work that I'm working on at the moment. And it's not necessarily about being your children not going to school. It's about us as parents de-schooling and eliminating that from our consciousness, so we can, you know, bend with what our children need. You know,
like, I think that's what happened with Luna, because I love the school, I love the teachers, I love the community, I get along with, I think I will actually go through a grieving process with the school, to be honest.
Yeah,
but she said to me, I'm ready now, I don't want to anymore, like, because she was struggling with, like, you know, she's so into the creativeness and the all of that, but then maths has been introduced.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden she's like, I'm so dumb. I'm dumb. Oh. Yeah. And I was like, but you're not. I don't even know maths, Luna.
Yeah.
Like, you're not dumb. And, you know, I tried to work with the teachers and they were great, but it's not, I just don't think it serves her right now in this. And she's telling me, and, you know, my son's told me for a long time, because he's so like, he just wants to be free.
Yeah,
he literally says them words, I just want to be free. Right.
Yeah, my son says the same. He's like, there's no way I can wear shoes all day.
Yeah.
That's just purely based on that. He'll probably never step foot in a school.
Well, but you don't have to wear schools at Steiner. Like, yeah. My kids go to school with no shoes all the time, purely because we can't find them. Yeah. But
yeah, I love it. But yeah, it's yeah, it's such a big unraveling. But you know, there's so many families are choosing not to send their kids to school at the moment. Like, it's such a huge movement. I read this statistic the other day that this was in the US. I don't really know the statistics in Australia. I know one pretty crazy statistic, which I'll share in a second. Yeah. But in the US, in just New York State, rates of homeschooling have gone up 90% in the last year.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so, and also, you know, after COVID here, just in New South Wales, 50,000 students became unaccounted for. They haven't registered for homeschooling. They're unaccounted for. So what that shows me is that, you know, the silver lining is that parents actually realize that they don't have to send them to school, and that the system is just completely broken. You know, if they're unaccounted for and there's no process around that system supporting them, then obviously that system's broken. It's not working.
Yeah.
And people have realized, and they're taking it into their own hands and just doing it their way. So yeah, I just found that. I was like shocked. I was like, is that nationwide? It's just New South Wales.
Because you have to, like, what, like, for me to be able to take my kids from this school, I have to register as a homeschooler to be released from the
claws.
released from the machine.
Yeah.
But I'm actually still
a bit annoying that
I'm hoping to just get lost in the cracks over the years.
You can't. I can't share too much about that.
Totally.
But yeah, there's always a way. If you
wanna
find that loophole, it exists.
I feel like I will find I already knew that at the start. I'm like, I said to the, do I have to register for homeschool? Because Chrissy, we cannot release you without it. And I'm like, God damn it, fine.
Yeah, we went through that when we took Sylvester out of Steiner.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Circle back to birth, I would love to hear about your second birth, and then, because with Essie, you had a home birth with a midwife again, is that right?
Yeah.
So what was that like? And then what was the process of birthing your third baby? Like, what changed for you to not have a midwife present for that last birth?
Such a good question. So with Essie's birth, I had her almost 4 years after I had Sylvester. And I still didn't know much about free birth at that time. I just thought, oh, well, you know, I had a hospital midwife. I didn't want to go down that road again. So I employed a private midwife, which, yeah, I liked her, I guess. Like her, I didn't, she's like older. So it was really nice to have that older woman energy. But at the birth, I didn't actually integrate this until I free birthed. So at Essie's birth, I think my doula called her without asking me. Somebody called her without asking me. So I must have been showing signs of what she thought was, you know, I was about to birth. And so my midwife just rocked up and with her. And at the time I was fine with it. You know, I really liked her. I was happy to have her in my house, I guess. I didn't think, oh, why are you here? You know, I was like, oh, welcome. I really liked having her there because I liked the older woman energy. So, like I said, I didn't actually integrate all of this until after I pre-birthed Solomon. And when she arrived, everything just stopped. And it was like, I was just thinking about her. I was thinking about, and then I was thinking that it was taking too long. And it was a really incredible birth, though. I loved how long it was. And at the time I was really in it, but, you know, upon reflection, obviously her energy in my space, she was tired. I'm pretty sure she probably needed the birth the day before or a couple of days earlier. It just really shifted the energy like drastically. And I was aware of that in some way, but it wasn't like in the front of my awareness because I didn't really know any different, I guess. I just thought, you know, you have a midwife there and that's, you know, that's going to give me a great birth or whatever. I actually had a really blissful birth experience with her. I would say that it was pain-free. Aside from all of the other things going on, it's so funny how you can have two different experiences at once.
Totally.
And I never think, oh, it would have been different if my midwife wasn't there. It was the exact medicine that I needed, right? I needed that experience to happen. I needed, like, I wasn't in a point in my life where I was even able to assert boundaries about much. You know, I knew I was going to home birth and everybody around me knew that that was my decision and respected that, but I hadn't asserted boundaries as to when I invite other people into my space or how to go about communicating those needs, you know, because I just didn't even know what that looked like for myself. So Essie's birth was really powerful and blissful and pleasurable, but it was also like extremely interrupted on reflection. So my midwife was like taking notes, she was tired, she was observing me in through that, you know, medical lens, and wanted to listen to the baby a lot when I was in transition. And I actually had a really significant moment, which again, I didn't integrate until afterwards. I was in transition, and I was had my head on the side of the pool, and I was having micro naps, and they weren't micro naps. I was actually traveling into, I was having a psychedelic experience where I was traveling to this like really dense jungle, and all of these leaves were everywhere, and they had this like amazing auric kind of color around them. And I was looking for Essie. She was a leaf, and I was looking for her.
So gorgeous.
Yeah, and I remember, like, as I was having this nap, my midwife, obviously, to her, now's a good time to ask if I can use the Doppler, right? Mm. I was having a psychedelic experience. Mm. And she was just doing her job, you know, like, I need to take some responsibility for inviting that into my space as well. Like, it's all...
It
was all perfect, but like I would never do that to somebody ever. And so she's like, oh, I want to use the Doppler, and that took me out of that space, and I couldn't get back there.
Mm.
Like I couldn't get back there, and I was so frustrated. I would try and have a micro nap after that and try and get back there. And I think it was like maybe not in that specific moment because I was just in the birth portal and giving birth, but as I integrated her birth and, you know, when I got pregnant with Solomon, that was a moment where I was like, I don't want that to happen. I don't want anybody to take me away from having that peak psychedelic experience. Like I couldn't get back there. And like to most people, my birth with Essie is like a textbook perfect home birth. It was beautiful. You know, she was born into her dad's arms, and I had all my support people around me. I had my midwife there who was and a backup midwife and all the things. And in a lot of ways, it was really beautiful, and it was in alignment with where I was at that time. But it was also like a huge cracking open for me, because having that psychedelic experience interrupted by such a minimal intervention, someone just asking me a question, made me really aware of how delicate and how easy it is to fracture a person's birth experience. Yeah. And so after that, I was like, you know, when I got pregnant with Solomon, his spirit made himself very known to me, like within days of birthing Essie. And I was like, whoa, buddy, like, just gave birth, man. And so I fended him off for a while. I even asked him to come through as a grandchild, because three wasn't really on the cards for us, but he was like, nah, I'm coming through. And so he was conceived when Essie was about one, in the Blue Mountains. And yeah, I just knew, like I knew that I couldn't actually have anybody other than my partner. And I ended up inviting a friend into my birth space, because I birthed in the day and my kids wanted heaps of food and I wanted Jeff, and my friend was actually perfect to have her there, because she took all those, I don't know if you've seen the beautiful film photos of his birth.
Yes, they're so beautiful.
Yeah, but even me like directing her didn't take me out of that space, because it was all coming from me. Like,
yes, I fully get that.
I picked Sylvester's nose during my birth. Mm. Like my kids were just playing and being loud, and it was just a normal day in our house, but I didn't have any of that entity, anybody observing me in that way. No one was asking to do anything to my body. No one was worried about the baby or worried about me. And I didn't really have the same blissful going to the psychedelic jungle experience as I did with Essie, but I fully went there. I fully went to the place of, it's indescribable. Like, I'm sure you resonate with the indescribableness of it.
Yeah,
it was just pure, radical, authentic, raw self-expression, uninhibited, completely. And yeah, it was, you know, just added another layer to that cracking open from Essie's birth. So yeah, it was for me the perfect journey to have all three births unfold like that, you know, given who I am and how I grew up and the type of culture, birth culture I was exposed to. It's actually like amazing that I made it to free birth, to be honest. If you asked me if I'd free birth when I was in my 20s, I would think that was crazy, and only crazy people do that are irresponsible. So much reclamation has happened in that process, and obviously led me to unschooling. Like I just can't, you know, send my kids to school after
that.
It's just
so connected, isn't it? It's just so like connected.
yeah. And I obviously I had fears come up throughout my pregnancy. I think that's normal. It's really baby to be safe. I think fear is really healthy. But I had the tools to really lean into those, and I always came back to trust. I knew my baby was going to be okay. And Solomon gave me very clear visions of how he was going to be born and when he was going to be born and where he was going to be born. Like all of the visions I had came to fruition right down to the time that he was going to be born. And so I think if I hadn't have had that experience with Essie, it wouldn't have led me to be able to fully surrender into that experience with Solomon, because I was going into that having had awareness of where I needed to go, I guess, and what I needed in order to support me to go there. Yeah.
I wouldn't have had like the conviction maybe to walk into my fears like I did and have the birth that I did with Finn if I hadn't had my past birth experiences, because I knew I didn't want that again, how disruptive it had felt for me. And I was grieving something that I didn't get a full physiological birth. I knew I wasn't there was so much incompletion and things that upset me, but again it was like I take responsibility for those experiences because I wasn't ready in that moment to free birth. I asked those people into my space, but it was because of those experiences that then I could have this last birth.
Yeah,
it's like we're all on this journey, and each experience is medicine in its own way and takes us to the next step.
Exactly. And you know, there's actually so many women out there now. I support a lot of women who free birth their first babies. And I feel that, you know, the ripple effect of healing has really taken place. Yes. Like a lot of the women I support are probably, you know, like 10, 15 years younger than me now.
Yeah.
And even in, you know, a short amount of time through, you know, women like myself reclaiming birth, the women before me, and just the way that that's trickled down, it's like inspiring this whole generation of mothers entering their matrescence to just
go so beautiful
their first baby. I'm just like, that's so cool. Like I feel like the pendulum has really swung, and I know for a fact, you know, me sharing my free birth stories has resonated with so many women and supported them to take back their birth. And I just think that's so, it's so important for us to share our all birth stories, obviously, but to share our free birth stories.
It's just storytelling is so powerful. It's the way that women are meant to communicate. We used to, you know, share through stories all the time. It's how our like herstory was passed forward down the line through stories. And I feel like it's so amazing to have like platforms like social media and podcasts now where we can continue that. And it's such an amazing resource for women to tap into and to really like find what's right for them and to feel empowered in their journeys, whatever that looks like for them. But yeah, I definitely have like witnessed that there's been a huge leap like recently, which is so exciting. Like in all areas, like, you know, in unschooling, in homeschooling, in free birth, in birthing your way. And like, I can see this, like, I don't know, it's just like the fire's like, you know, starting to crackle and it's starting to like get really big. And it's like, yes, like though all those little things that the women before us did to use their voice, and then those women who shared their stories, it's now created this huge tidal wave. Like it's, we're all connected, we're all rippling forward and forward, and it's so powerful to just share like the simple art of storytelling. You know,
it's so good. And it's interesting because now, like, you might have seen in Queensland they're like cracking down on homeschooling, and there was all that media stuff going on with free birth, and like it's obvious that it's a threat to the system if that's happening. And
mm-hmm.
then nobody is ever going to stop any woman from free birthing if that's what she's wants to do.
Yeah.
No amount of fear mongering. And it's so funny because the media take that angle that they're doing it because they can't get a midwife or they're doing it from previous birth trauma. And sure, maybe some women are, but for the majority of women that I support, they're doing it because they want a free birth, because that's the truth. That's their truth. You know, they want to experience birth in that way, and they don't feel like they want anybody that's
absolutely
that system. Like a lot of women in the community where I live, they don't even want to have a birth keeper at their birth. You know,
I
had no one at my birth, and that's just because at the end of the day, I was like, I'm so sensitive.
Yeah.
Like I'm so sensitive, and I'm actually so lucid in birth. Like I don't go off into the stars. I'm so here that if someone says something or comes in and, you know, I needed to take that like responsibility over my experience and to be like, I know I will be interrupted if there's like anyone else there. And also my births are quite quick.
Yeah.
And it's quite intense.
Yeah.
And so, but that's what I chose and what I wanted, not because of, you know, having trauma, or it was just me knowing myself deeply.
Yeah.
And that's what I chose. And I think, yeah, that has also been another big shift in like free birth world. Like women just, it's a legitimate choice.
Yeah.
It always has been, but we're killing that story of like these women don't have access to a midwife, or they've come from trauma and they don't want to go back to the hospital. It's like, it's actually just a legitimate choice, like a way to birth if that's right for you.
And why would you want to go back to a system that traumatized you? Why would you
totally
to invite that entity into your space ever again? Like,
yeah, it's smart. It's smart. Yeah. Women are smart. Duh, like, and why would I choose that again?
Totally. It's just obvious that, you know, they can do anything that they want, but they won't ever be able to stop women from free birthing.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't ever be able to stop people from living a school-free life either.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just not even possible. People will just do whatever it takes to be able to do that. I know in countries where homeschooling is illegal, people just move to a different country. You know, in the Netherlands it's illegal, in France it's illegal, and I can't think of any others. I think Germany as well, and a couple of others in Europe and, you know, and in the world. Anyone that I've connected that's from those countries that really wants to homeschool have just moved to another country.
People
make it work. And another thing that people, you know, a common argument people say is that it's just for people who are privileged, it's just for people who have money, and it's just like, that's so far from the truth. It's like such a diverse socioeconomic community here in the Northern Rivers, and it's really painted to be like one way. And what I experience here in my own community is people from all walks of life, all different socioeconomic backgrounds and status, coming together to do what they believe in, and that's to school their children outside the system, and they just do whatever they need to do to make it work.
Yeah, because they feel so plugged into who they are and what's right for them and their children. And it's like, when you know that and you're clear on that, there's no other way. You just make it happen. It's like, you can't compromise once you're awake. It's like, you can't go back to sleep kind of thing. It's like, this is just what needs to happen.
Yeah.
I'd love to end this beautiful episode just sort of hearing a little bit about what unschooling like looks like for your family, and like just for inspiration and for those who are like feeling overwhelmed. I think it's really like beautiful to hear, like obviously it looks different to everyone, but just sort of like, do you like, what things do you call upon? Do your children like do any, you know, like groups, or like do you hang out with other families? Like what kind of resources do you pull into your experience?
It's really, it's been such an unraveling for us. It's really ebbed and flowed. We've outsourced a little bit over the last couple of years until early this year. Sylvester was doing like a couple of those like pod kind of groups.
Mm-hmm.
And deep down, I guess we kind of knew that that wasn't really in alignment for us. And I guess my conditioning and Jeff's as well, we were stuck on like the socialization thing.
Yeah.
And like they were good in some ways, but yeah, I don't think it wasn't really in flow with our family. And Sylvester wasn't really getting what he wanted out of it either. So he's not doing anything at the moment. He does a bush school one day a week actually, which is like based around storytelling and singing, and he really likes it. But yeah, he's nearly nine, and recently he's just begun reading and writing. He's really into maths, loves it. So, you know, Jeff's a school teacher, which is like might sound like that's a good thing, but it's actually been made it more challenging for us in a lot of ways, because, you know, he's aware of his conditioning and
yeah,
he can tell when he's slipping too much into school teacher mode. So yeah, I guess we're constantly like reevaluating and in a detangling process around that. And what we always come down to is listening to what our kids want and creating learning experiences for them. So at the moment, what that looks like, it ebbs and flows all the time. So what it looks like this month might look completely different next month. But what it looks like at the moment is that Sylvester's really loving structured learning right now. Like, he froths on it. He wants to do it like every day. And he's got such a little engineer's brain. Like, he really loves academic learning, which is interesting because Steiner learning just doesn't resonate with him at all. Whereas Essie, my middle child, she would like, you know, she's all about that type of learning style, even though we don't directly teach any particular learning style. So Sylvester's really into you know, self-guided learning books and workbooks, which is great. You know, it's awesome. So Jeff will do like a session with him on Saturday and Sunday and sometimes Monday. He's actually doing it right now. And Jeff basically just sits next to him the whole time.
Yeah.
And it's like an hour. And so Sylvester gets so much out of that. And it's funny because I didn't think we would do that. I thought we'd just be free and see what happens. But Sylvester's like, he goes and we've got this tub under the bed and he goes and grabs his books out and he really gets into it. Like, I can see it's all dropping in for him, and he's started reading like short novels and he's just frothing on it. So that's pretty much as far as we go though. So I guess that'd be like 3-ish hours a week of structured learning with one of us present. Essie and Solomon want to get amongst it as well. So they do a bit of reading eggs while he's doing that on our iPad, which Jeff and I get into a bit of conflict about because I actually hate reading eggs.
Is that an app?
Yeah.
I know what that is. Yeah, my kids love that too. Like,
yeah, I just like, yeah, I don't know. It's got like video game vibes for me, but Jeff's really good at facilitating that in a way that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a constant ebb and flow. And I also think, you know, that's when you're co-parenting and homeschooling, you've both got your own conditioning. It's like birth, right? Like, but Jeff and I are really good at meeting in the middle and co-creating together. So that's really good. I do so much nature stuff with the kids. So, you know, most days we're out in nature and creating in nature. And I like to take a slab of clay out to the creek or painting. We made shadow puppets recently. Just whatever I've got on hand, I do heaps of stuff in
nature. That's so cool.
That's my main thing. And then the rest of the time is like random, spontaneous, a lot of self-directed learning. Like, our kids spend a lot of time in autonomous play.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not a big screen family. They watch a movie like on the projector a couple of times a week. But apart from that, we really just want to encourage play as much as possible. Sylvester's really, he's like really great at self-directed learning. Like, when he wants to learn something, he's been like that since he was born though. Like, when he was learning to talk, he would repeat the same word over and over again until he got it. So that's, he's always learned in that way. And so when he's, you know, he does a lot of stuff on Procreate on the iPad, when he wants to learn a new skill, he'll just teach himself or find a
YouTube. Noah's so much like him. And so like I'm just feel like you're talking about Noah right now.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So, I don't think, I know for a fact that if Sylvester was at school, he wouldn't get what he needs. Like he wants one-on-one, he wants a person right next to him to like fully not even walk him through a process, but to reflect what he's learning back to him.
Yeah.
That he can ask lots of questions to. He asks so many questions all day long. So it gets really overwhelming.
Same.
Yeah. And if he is at school, like how on earth can any one person in a classroom facilitate? Yeah.
And they get bored and they shut off. And it's just so sad to watch like their creativity and their like they're so excited to learn, and then all of a sudden that kind of a switch gets flicked and they just give up.
Yeah, totally.
Like I'm watching like that happen with Noah, and I'm like, want to keep fostering his enthusiasm for learning and like just being so like curious about life. And yeah, that's what's really like leading me down. There's so many reasons, but mainly that one. Like when we're not at school, like when we go away, he's just like this other kid.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you've got a podcast that you just launched on this whole topic as well. So congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's like,
can I give it a little plug?
Yes. Plug away.
Gotta plug it. So I just launched yesterday something that I've been wanting to do for ages. It's a podcast called The School Free Life. Which is, it's going to grow into lots of different things, but we're starting with a podcast right now, and I'm just interviewing people that inspire me who are living a school-free life. So I've got some really great guests coming on, and it's just to kind of create a resource for parents like yourself, Lucy, who are kind of at that intersection of, and you as well, Christy. I was going to call you Kirsty. Sorry, Christy.
Everyone calls me Kirsty. It's good. They're like, Kirsty, whatever. Like, honestly, whatever.
Because the kindy teacher at school is Kirsty.
Yeah, it's just for it's for anybody, obviously, but it's really aimed at people who are just wanting to kind of get some information about, you know, how other people do it, and kind of support them to work out a way that that flows for them and their family. Because there are actually so many different expressions of unschooling. And it's really great to kind of connect in with other people that are doing it as well, so you can just, you know, work out what works for you and your family.
So an amazing resource. So amazing.
On all the platforms now, which is exciting. Yeah.
Yes. Well, we'll share that on our Instagram and in the show notes, and I can't wait to like dive into your first episode and to listen to all of the future episodes.
Podcasts in Australia at all. There's not many resources in Australia
in podcast form as well.
Overseas, but I can't really think of any off the top of my head that are specific for Australia.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's I've got a lot of homeschooling friends, but like the way they do it suits them, and I love that for them, but it's like they're more sort of brought the school to the home.
Yeah,
type of vibe, which is like whatever, like it's still
been
cool
guilty of that for sure. We've definitely been guilty of that. It's easy.
Yeah, but I can see why for sure. Definitely.
And to be honest, it's a totally valid way to homeschool if that's what
totally
yeah.
I feel like I wouldn't do that though, so that's why I was like, I'm looking for people that are not doing that.
Yeah,
because
now I've got someone.
There's so many different ways you can do it. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Amy, for coming on. Like, we've been waiting for you to come on for such a long time. And I can't wait to listen to your podcast. And I actually remember Prim. She's like rolling around nude with a banana squashed in her bed. Like,
she's scratching her bed.
Yeah. Because I did your free birth course.
Amazing.
Before I had her.
Amazing.
Yeah, I did that with my friend Amy, and I really, really love that. I'm actually still really good friends with a lot of the women that were in that group.
Yay.
Yeah, so we formed like, it's, I love that though. I love that that's what happened.
What it's all about, hey.
Yeah, well, I couldn't say much before, but it's like you were talking about the media and like storytelling and all the, yeah, where you guys are talking about storytelling and all that. And I'm like, the world, like for an embodied mother, and in like a mother in her truth and women in their truth, that's like terrifying for the system. Because when we start waking up, like, and moving forward, oh, sorry, am I freezing?
No, you're all good.
Oh, when we all start waking up and stepping into this power where we're like having these, you know, conscious conception and pregnancies and births and mothering and postpartum and unschooling, like, look out, world. Like, yes. Honestly,
it's an exciting time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the healing the sisterhood too, and just like that is so powerful, because when we all come together like this and share our different stories and respect each other and understand that we're not all the same, but we all have these things to, you know, gift each other, that just it's so powerful and beautiful, and we're not alone in this. It's like, oh, it just makes me love life, to be honest. And I feel more confident in this journey because I'm like, I've got all these women next to me. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
This
all about
this convo was like so amazing and juicy. And yeah, as we said at the start, it's like all of our favorite things to talk about. So yeah, thank you so much for your time and coming on and having a chat on our podcast. We will link all of your details on our page and in our show notes, and share all of your amazing offerings that you have, because they're so valuable. Thank you so much for all your, like, all your work that you put out into the world.
I love it. Thanks for the acknowledgement.
All right, lots of love.